This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 56, The Shame Game.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, folks. You are here listening to another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. I am your co-host, Phaedra Boynodiris, hailing from lovely, sunny North Carolina on a beautiful August day. And I'm joined here by my illustrious co-hosts, Michael Rowe and Michael Martin. Hi, guys.
Hey, Phaedra.
Hey, Phaedra.
Morning.
Good evening.
We've got quite the show lined up today.
By the way, if this is your first episode of GamesAtWork.biz that you're listening to, welcome.
We're happy to have you.
And for those in the NSA, welcome back.
Yes, welcome back. Can you please recover that file I deleted accidentally?
There is a business model in that. I've read about it.
I have. There's a great business model in that. By the way, this might be a 3-4-year-old callback to another show that Michael and I did. Twitter has a business model now.
Like underpants gnomes, right?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Get a lot of users, ? Profit.
Well, actually, I saw a link. I saw a link where they're doing some interesting analytics to discover where a tweet causes a out of the Twitter ecosystem purchase decision.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I was like, well, you can monetize that. That's kind of interesting.
Ooh, that is interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, Phaedra, we have a great show. Tell us about it.
We've got a great show. We're going to talk about some interesting goings on in the realm of gamification. I'm going to do a minor rant on that. And then we're going to talk about some comebacks. I think the theme for this show should be comeback.
Yes. Come back to the future.
Come back to the future.
Not to be.
Starting with virtual reality. Do you remember the days when we all thought we'd be walking around with virtual reality headgear on, playing our video games from the lovely comforts of our living room, and then that just sort of poof, vanished?
The Halcyon days.
Halcyon days.
Thank you.
Actually, there's a great album called Halcyon Days, or a song called Halcyon Days.
Well, that explains why you could pronounce it.
That's right, by Jason and the Scorchers.
Well, one of the big makers of virtual reality gear, this is Oculus Rift, has just brought on a new chief technology officer, and of course, maven in the gaming industry, none other than John Carmack. So the co-founder of Wolfenstein 3D, id Software, Quake.
Doom.
So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in this space with someone like that, a CTO.
This so makes so much sense. It really does. Think about it. I mean, this is the guy who brought, you know, that first-person 3D world to the masses in games.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's put that on your face.
My worry, though, is I remember trying on the headgear, and I would get vertigo. Does that happen to you? Would you get kind of dizzy?
So you've played with the Oculus headgear?
Not the Oculus, the early rendition.
Oh, yeah. The real early stuff, which was.
Yeah, those big helmets and the glass.
Yeah.
Big helmet? Yeah. That's dark helmet.
It's dark helmet. Yeah, and, you know, my mind was going to High Fidelity, too, when you were talking about John, but that's a different John. That's not good John Carnack. Or his sister Joan, for that matter. So you know, I didn't get vertigo when I tried those. But again, I wasn't trying to move my head around too fast or too much. But I can imagine if you tried to, you would, right?
Well, just imagine you're sitting there and you're playing a game. It's got some really cool music and you're kind of bobbing your head. And suddenly the whole world is going,
Well, not just that you're fighting zombies. So you kind of have to dart your head around to see where the zombies are going to come from next,
yeah, but
right?
Zombies are slow.
Okay, maybe not
so
zombies.
Maybe
fast zombies.
Fast zombies. Would those be fombies?
Wasn't there like a knockout game, Punch Out? What was something like that that was also headgear related? I don't remember if I played that or not.
Well, I remember that
a boxing game.
One of the really oh my god, there is something called Fombies. defend the donut shop as you gun down zombie animals.
What? Wow, that's funny. I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, I mean. I remember one of the really cool reasons for going to Dave & Buster's when it first came out was the whole idea of the fact that you had these VR games, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, because you couldn't get them in just any other arcade.
No, I mean, you couldn't afford
you needed
to have
the capital,
right?
and you needed the we talked about this recently, the method of payment, which was once removed from cash. So you would use your cash to buy your Dave & Buster's card, which had your Dave & Buster's credits on it, which wasn't exactly cash because they gave you some extra credits, you know, kind of like Putt-Putt would hand you $20 worth of tokens, but it was really more than $20. So you kind of forgot it wasn't really a token equals a quarter. It's kind of less, but kind of more, and you couldn't figure it out.
Yes.
So you would go and spend and blow all kinds of money at Dave & Buster's.
Oh,
where did you play in Dave & Buster's? Is that Atlanta somewhere?
Yeah. There was a big one in kind of northwest Atlanta when I lived there that had lots of fun stuff that we did at Dave & Buster's. And when I was working with my team out in San Jose, San Diego? San Jose.
Yeah.
San Jose. There was a Dave & Buster's there that we met up with, you know, after work every once in a while.
Indianapolis had a couple, I think, because I was there too. So Phaedra, maybe going back to your future or back to your past for your Oculus Rift comment, the point here is that with John joining the team as their CTO, it's really applying those early lessons learned in those first virtual reality kind of experiences right into the technology, the Oculus Rift technology. And based on what you're describing, I think we should all expect to see big, big things.
Well, there's a question mark there because I also want to put forth the question, you know, we've had shows about Google Glass. And so now here we're seeing the Oculus Rift coming back into the picture, re-energized. Are they going to compete? I mean, would Google Glass be able to, in essence, do what Oculus Rift is planning on doing, offering that kind of an immersive experience? It'll be interesting to see. I mean, are they going to be going neck and neck in this space?
Well, I think it's actually two parallel tracks. One, Google Glass has been very I want to use the word restrictive, but that's probably too strong, to what they will or will not allow capabilities like, you know, face recognition, the type of data that you overlay on the real world to provide stuff is kind of augmented self, where a, you know, full Oculus environment is replaced world. So one is an overlay on the world and augmenting your own capabilities, and the other is a replacement of the world that, you know, it may augment your capabilities, but it replaces the world that you're in.
Very cyberpunk of you. Yes.
Yes.
But technically, Google Glass could do what Oculus Rift does, but it also does more. It's not like, you know, it would be only something different that would integrate with data sets and what's happening around you. You could potentially go black and only see the game.
Ooh, so you could essentially shift between panes,
yes,
or shift between layers of reality and world.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, what if you – just as if you were putting on a pair of Oculus Rift VR glasses.
So are you saying like if I had a pair of Google glasses that had lenses over both eyes and not just a floating lens over the one eye?
And let's say, for example, you got scared.
And I'm driving down the highway and somebody hacks in to my Google Glass and says, replace world.
Well, just think about, you know, that, you know, you would never have to be afraid again because your glasses would sense that you're beginning to be afraid and they would just darken for you and we'd have no reason to be afraid.
Well, either that or it would cover everything with fluffy rainbows. Fluffy rainbows. That's kind of weird, isn't it?
It is. So my point of view, I love yours, Michael. I almost wish I thought of it first. But my first thinking to Phaedra's question was, imagine what the interaction is going to be with the haves and have-nots, right?
Yes.
So if you can imagine – I'll put an image in your head. Walking around with a miner's helmet, you know, that has the, you know, the big spotlight on top, except for the fact that this miner's helmet actually covers your face or covers enough of your face, your eyes. And that light is not really a light as much as it is an ocular ingestion device. So you are now cybernetically enhanced in terms of what you can see, what you can read, what you can translate, what you can get to via that eye or a pair of eyes. Now you've got haves and have-nots here. So you have to think about what it would be like to interact with people like that.
Ooh, yeah, you know? Yeah. So I'm sitting there talking to you and I'm trying to remember things and you're just constantly snap, snap, snap. You've got everything at the tip of your tongue. You remember everything. You're able to describe stuff. You're able to make, you know, qualitative leaps in the conversation based off of the data that's just constantly being pumped into your face.
Kind of like what we're doing now, except we're doing that with brain power.
Yes.
Kind of sort.
Yes.
Except in the future, we would be funnier.
In the future, everyone's funnier.
Hey, did you get the new Steve Martin chip?
Yeah.
Let's get small.
Let's get small. I can't. I've got to go back and listen to that album. I've actually got that album.
But where I was heading with this is that being able to interact with other people. I mean, can you imagine staring into the unblinking eye of your conversational partner and not really knowing if they're looking at you or they're on a different pane or a different layer or looking something up or reading something or.
It's kind of like, and you remember the old song by the Vapors, Turning Japanese,
AM,
which has a line in it that says, "I want a doctor to take your picture from the so I can look at you from inside as well." So you could have that conversation, and as you're looking at someone, you're like doing a brain scan.
So sure, I want to know
what's going on in my brain while we're having a conversation. I'm not sure. I want to know what's going on in my brain during most conversations.
So Phaedra, Michael went cyberpunk. I went maybe some sort of wacky combo Google Glass / Oculus Rift human interaction method. What about you? What's your thinking?
I'm in agreement with both of you, actually. I like the idea of, you know, instead of one pane, potentially you'd be able to add on two panes, and then that would be another business model for them that they could go and really go into the gaming realm as well. I think that would make sense. It wouldn't be a huge leap, I think, to envision that Google would make that kind of a leap. Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. I think it would really require people to think multidimensionally in ways that they just aren't today, you know. And maybe the first baby steps that get you there is almost like a VH1 pop up video, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're watching something, and then bloop, you know, up pops, you know, a little factoid for you about something that you're seeing or in the movie or why this actor was important or the reference.
Or your plane is about to leave. You better stop watching your movie.
Yeah. No, you don't need to worry about it. Just watch the movie as you're bored.
we'll take it with you. You can watch it on the small screen.
Yes. Well, that, you know, that's the really cool thing. And I think this is one of the things that, you know, technology like the new why am I going blank on Google's new little TV plug? What's the name of the thing? But anyway, the whole idea
The Chromium something.
Chrome
or that, right?
Plug. Chromium thingy bobber. Chrome thingy.
We'll fix it in post.
We'll fix that in post. But the Google device, which you know, allows you to, while you're viewing something on your phone or on your tablet, and then you kind of just throw it up to the TV, and I can imagine, you know, pulling it off the TV and throwing it onto your augmented reality device and walking down the street.
Yeah, and why not?
Why not?
Why not?
It's so safe. I mean, but I can imagine walking down the street in, you know, a very safe city, you know, let's call it London or New York or Shanghai, you know, one of these big cities Gotham. That has nobody driving around, Gotham, watching a movie as you're bopping your way down the street and overlaying the second pane, you know, that would be the T-pane, you know, walking across traffic, everybody else is watching it too, or watching something similar. So they know, based off of triangulation between your device and their device, that they're about to hit you, and they can then play the game, hit the pedestrian, or choose not to.
Ah, yeah, so you can activate the systems in the car to have the car swerve out of the way and not hit you.
Absolutely, and, you know, there are a lot of things going on with connected cars and other devices to do that, you know, look ahead and understand what's happening on the roads and the characteristics so that other people can benefit from the fact that you swerved.
Yes, yes, and everyone else kind of manages accordingly.
Yes.
But you know, there's an important question to be asked. With all these, you know, things you're trying to do at the same time, multiple panes, multiple visions, multiple things, who's got time to play games anyway?
Well, I don't. I only play them at work.
Well, apparently Dave Rogerson asked that question.
Yes.
And we were looking at this a little bit, and he used some interesting stuff that he learned as part of the, what is it, University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business course that talked about gamification and looking at things as basic as green stamps and Cracker Jack prizes, which I'm sure
I had not realized that green stamps had been around since 1896.
And for our international audience, we should describe what a green stamp
is.
It's
a stamp that is the color green.
No, describe Cracker Jack prizes. What is that?
Well, actually, we need to do both of them, right? So green stamp was actually a collection game that you would collect stamps shopping at, what was it, S&H?
Yep.
Right?
And you'd paste them.
And you would paste them in a little booklet, and once you got to a certain level of the booklet, you would get, you know, some kind of gift or a discount based off of turning in your stamps.
Yes.
And Cracker Jacks is a candy.
Caramel-coated popcorn.
Caramel-coated popcorn. Popcorn also being known by the name Maze. which also includes peanuts, known by the name Peanuts. and they have, you know, it's funny because I remember as a little kid that the Cracker Jack game, not game, but the secret prizes. Toy surprises in the box were much better, right? Some of them were actually things like... oh, God.
Odor rings.
Yeah, rings or little toys.
Magnifying glasses.
Yeah, things, cars. Things like you find still in the Kinder eggs, right?
Well, if you can find them, because in the U.S. you can't get them because they're dangerous.
Right.
Very
dangerous. You might eat the little tip, you know, anyway. But now they're all little paper things. It could be, you know, tattoos or stickers or little jokes or whatever. Well, now, I haven't had Cracker Jacks in years. So maybe they've gone back to...
No, they're not all that great. I mean, you used to get like a whole booklet of temporary tattoos.
Yeah, now it's what, one?
It might be one or two, you know, so it's not as many. But the Cracker Jacks themselves are still pretty good, and they're all of course, they're part of the baseball song, you know.
Yes.
So, you know, that's...
Buy me
that's
some peanuts too. And Cracker Jacks.
Yes. Right, because they're two separate things, you know.
Even
you
though Cracker Jacks have peanuts in them.
Well, they just want to have their, you know, protein content.
Yes.
It's probably from someone from Georgia who came up with that song.
Yeah, I know.
So
talk about some more of this article. I mean, this is kind of interesting, really talking about, you know, how much engagement you need to have, right? And how you leverage gamification to drive that engagement from an engagement loop perspective, right?
Yeah, he calls out some interesting examples. I mean, he talks about Coca-Cola as an example. And if you go to mycokerewards.com, you'll see some interesting examples. For example, they're saying, okay, there's an online game for Monopoly. If you rack up points within this online game, you can actually get discounts on things, get really cool coupons, donate to your favorite school, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it sounds more like a, you know, you're getting codes off of products and entering them in return for rewards.
Right. Well, the interesting thing there is each purchase provides you the chance of something that will engage you more with the brand. Right.
Yeah.
So you want to buy more, the benefit for the brand. And thereby, you get some potential reward out of it.
Here's the thing. Whenever I think about gamification as it pertains to retail, I cannot but help channel my Aunt Olga. So let me explain how Aunt Olga operates. The women in my family in general operate this way. And that is, they get this utter glee. I mean, serious glee at the idea of finding a good sale. They could care less about the brand. They could care less about what they just bought and the fact that they've got 500 of the same damn thing in their closet. But just this concept that, you know, guess how much this was? Guess how much percentage off this was? And it's like this guessing game. And if I don't guess the right number, they're just gleefully tell me. So for them,
so I saved $300 by spending an extra $1,000 that I would have never bought.
It's like, will you ever wear this? No. But yet, it's a game to them. Just the sale game.
Yes.
The discount game. So I'd love to figure out how one captures that idea, because I think there's a huge market there. I can't envision that they would be going online and playing, you know, the Minute Maid video game to rack up points so they could print out a coupon. They want something more viscerally tied to the discount. You know what I mean? And to be able to relay that reputation.
Yep, yep, yep.
Well, and their reputation is one they share with their friends and with their family, obviously, right, Phaedra?
Yes.
So their leaderboard, if you will, is sitting around the kitchen table, coffee table,
bragging rights.
Guess what I got for 72% off? You
know? Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Drinking it. You're soaking in it.
You're soaking in it. Dishwasher detergent. Dishwashing liquid.
No, but this is a very psychological element that, you know, is what people engage in. Loyalty cards. You know, I read an article today or this week about not providing your zip code. You know, when a store asks you for your zip code, you're like, what's my zip code? You know, you already have my credit card number.
Right.
You know, what more does my zip code give you? Well, apparently the answer is everything. So
there's lots of demographics, you know, based off of zip code that they can pull in a big data perspective.
Well, they can do that. They can do a better job of target marketing, but the zip code and the credit card helps to identify you apparently on a more of an individual basis than purely the credit card number, because I guess there might be more than one Michael Rowe, Michael Martin, or even maybe more than one Phaedra Poynanderis somewhere, and the zip code will help uniquely identify that person a little bit quicker. Right. So it's to me the psychological game principles are really the key elements. And Phaedra, you and Michael both found this other article that was really quite nice too, that was talking about businesses leveraging gamification techniques to help with business travel procurement rules attainment. Right.
Yes.
And
I didn't like this. I did not like this example. And
well,
I'll tell you why I didn't like it.
Tell us why you didn't like it. I think it's a great example. We all love to comply with corporate direction.
I dislike this example. So the way that this works, these are businesses that want people to more closely comply with certain business travel corporate programs, right? They're certain, you know, guidelines, lowest cost. Did you get the lowest cost fare? Did you get the lowest cost hotel? Did you, you know what I mean? Did you stay in the shanty tack down the road from the conference hall instead of a hotel? So in essence, the way that they've used gamification is they're saying the cheaper the hotel, the cheaper the flight, the more points you accrue, and then this is going to be put on a leaderboard for others to see. And so for me, it sounds just like the shame game, you know? It's the shame game. What do you mean? Oh, you didn't stay in the shack? Oh, man, are you a big spender? You know what I mean? That's just this doesn't feel like gamification to me.
Well, I guess it is gamification in the sense that it is driving a behavior based off of, you know, some set of rules in a way that's not necessarily negative.
It's negative. You don't stay in the shanty shack and you get shunned by your peers.
Well, but you could have then been able to game the system so that you have a couple extra dollars to have a nice drink at the hotel later on that night.
Well, see, that's where the difference, I think, would be. So let's talk about, you know, changing it ever so slightly so it's not the shame game.
Oh, I like the shame game.
Maybe so. We'll talk about that later.
In the post show.
If there's a way to say, well, how does the employee and the company both win?
That's right? Called a lose-lose. So, oh, sorry, a win-win.
So what if we shift this just a bit and we try to create a situation where the employee and the company benefit as well? So there might be a way of saying,
ah. Saying, right?
Saying, ah. Well, I already answered the phone once and nobody was there, so I'm not going to answer it again. The way that I was thinking was if the employee could save on the prescribed hotel limit ranges, the meal limit ranges, maybe even the airfare ranges, and was able then to share in that benefit with the company or the client. Now you're creating a situation that you're aligning the interests of the employee and the interests of the company perhaps together in a really, really good way. Yeah, not this one, Michael. This is probably the cheapest phone I think I've seen.
So what you're saying is if there was some way of motivating the behavior of the employee – in a way that made more sense because they'd be able to better understand or better see how their sacrifice gives more meaning to them.
Well,
what's
the carrot versus the stick in this game? Right now, the shame game is the stick game, right?
Mm-hmm.
That if you don't follow, you know, the letter of the procedure, you'll be called on it in a public way and your other employees – other teammates, other colleagues will all say, oh, shame on you, Phaedra. You didn't stay at the shack.
But on the flip side of this, you know, some of this I think is just out and out wrong. There should be a structure and a policy that says, look, you must take the lowest available airfare at the time of booking because that's what the company is asking you to do. And if you want to do something different, that's on you as an individual. If, you know, similarly.
Well, I think the problem that you have there is it's a binary when you do it that way. Yeah. So you know, let's say I can show that the lowest available airfare for a trip that I need to go on business is $500 based off of, you know, time of day, blah, 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 blah. Right. I'm willing to buy it myself and maybe bump up to a better class fare. Because, you know, I can get into business, right? And pay the difference myself.
Or you can
myself.
Do Economy Plus or whatever. Yeah.
And so I can do something, but many policies do not allow that. You either pass or fail.
Yeah.
So how do you set up a game that says, okay, based off of this game, you could have done the fully approved nothing, right, rate, lowest available fare. Or you spent three bougie dollars right? Or whatever, widgets or whatever the magic points, and did something on your own that makes it convenient for the business and convenient for you, you've actually gamed in a positive way. So tell your fellow teammates, et cetera, how they can do it. So the business objective is still achieved. You've gamed it some in a way that shows the positive for the employee, and it helps others learn about new ways of setting up travel. Instead of just being a binary, did you follow the letter of the process? Is that where your head's at, Phaedra?
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes more sense to me. Also, and just rip out the whole leaderboard thing, because I would rather have it be between me and the company versus like this competition. Who did better? That in this situation, I don't think that would be very motivating for me anyway.
Yes,
know.
Who can travel more uncomfortably than others?
I know. Seriously.
Yes, I've got my, what is it called, a hair shirt on, and my cat of nine tails, and I'm whipping myself as I'm boarding the plane. Yeah. I win.
Right.
So that was one of the articles. We had a second one that was from the successfulmeetings.com that was talking about gamifying travel compliance, which is kind of a similar story here. But in my mind, it's a similar structure, right? You're either complying with the rules that you're being asked to comply with, or you have to go through an exception process and deal with the exceptions as necessary. So –
yeah, we'll have links to both of those in the show notes so that people can join in on either side of the rant. Because we'd like to hear your opinions.
Another idea would be, as you save, like if there was some way of seeing people and making better choices as it pertains to travel, so they're doing the lower cost option, these points, if they could be accrued and then used for something else that was even more meaningful to them, and they could decide what that was. So for example, if they wanted to accrue those points and pay for their gym, you know what I mean? Or pay for a first class ticket to wherever, depending on what kind of level they get to. You know what I mean? I think that could be more interesting. Then they could decide what it is that motivates them.
Yeah, because many times when you take lowest possible fare, you lose the ability to upgrade it with your own points.
Yeah, agreed.
Right.
Interested.
So I think we're just right at time. And I do want to let everybody know that we have a special guest next week.
Yes,
I'm excited about this. I reached out to the CEO of Emotive, Tan Lee, who, as we talked about last week, kicked off a new Kickstarter on their new what's called Emotive Insight brain scanning headset. And Tan has agreed to join us on next week's show. So we're really excited that she'll be on and probably talk about some of the cool games and ways that people are using this technology in healthcare, in business, in education, et cetera. So it's going to be very, very exciting.
Awesome. I look forward to that. That'll be a good show.
Yes. So you guys need to tell all your friends and join us next week for that one.
And by yous guys, we're talking about all y'all who are
all
listening.
Y'all listening.
Yous guys.
Yous guys.
All right.
All right. Well,
guys,
thank you very much.
Have a wonderful day. Thanks for listening to another one, another episode of GamesAtWork.biz, and we're calling it a day.
Yes, we're calling it Earth Day, Game
Day,
a hot day,
a
Friday.
Yes.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.